Apoptosis going mad, my liver's gonna fail. Maybe it's from the radium I use to paint my nails. Well, say you hate me, carbon date me, throw me in the sea. I'll be back with time because I'm made of stardust and chemistry. Of stardust and chemistry.
Welcome to Cowboy Chemistry. I'm your host, Dylan Gardner, and I'm a PhD candidate at Texas Tech. And today, it's just me for a fun bonus episode on how to scientifically get the best cup of coffee. Coffee is the most valuable natural resource worldwide, if you don't count oil. The plant is believed to have originated in East Africa, most likely in Ethiopia. The first recorded recipe with coffee beans was a kind of energy bar where the coffee beans were ground up and mixed with animal fats to bring on long hunting trips or long journeys. Coffee traveled into the Arabian Peninsula next. Sufi monks were the first to drink the coffee to keep themselves awake for their late night prayers. Soon, the drink became very popular all over the region as alcohol was barred. So coffee houses called kava khans became hubs for socializing and education. Coffee spread to Europe next, taken first into Venice in 1615, and by 1650, it was a very fashionable beverage. Coffee was, of course, claimed to be medicinal, of course, curing drunkenness, gout, smallpox, and nausea. From there, coffee spread west to east into Persia and India by the early 17th century. Coffee was a valuable crop that at first was only being grown in Africa and Yemen. Yemen was the major source for Europeans, and of course they tried to keep it a monopoly. They would sterilize any beans that would leave their country. Eventually, Dutch traders managed to smuggle the plant out of Yemen and start plantations in what is now Sri Lanka. Separately, in 1670, a Sufi mystic, Baba Budan, smuggled 7 coffee seeds to the hills of Chikmagalur in southwest India, which became a world-renowned coffee-growing region. Coffee spread to the Americas in what is most popularly known as the Columbian Exchange, where plants, animals, and diseases were transported between the Western and Eastern hemispheres. Coffee was then cultivated again by the Dutch in their South American colony in the 18th century, now known as Suriname, which is a small country just north of Brazil. Coffee became just as popular in South and Central America as it had been in Europe. In the North American British colonies, tea was still the drink of choice until the 1773 Boston Tea Party, where drinking coffee was a part of the protest on the high taxes placed on tea by the British government. After the American Revolution, coffee was a patriotic drink in the newly formed United States. Today, coffee is cultivated worldwide along the bean belt, which runs along the equator. You must have a humid climate with steady temperatures around 68 degrees Fahrenheit or 20 degrees Celsius. The largest coffee-producing countries are Brazil, Vietnam, Indonesia, Colombia, Ethiopia, India, Mexico, Guatemala, Peru, and Honduras. The location and conditions of where you grow your coffee, it can profoundly affect its flavor. One major factor is the altitude. Higher altitudes are considered more favorable with the cooler temperatures extending the growth cycle, creating a richer flavor. However, higher altitude coffee also has less caffeine, leading to a less bitter taste than the lower elevations. Coffee grown at 5,000 feet or above, typically from Colombia, Ethiopia, Guatemala, and Kenya, are all going to be fruity and acidic. If you are growing it from about 4,000 to 5,000 feet, which is your Costa Rica, Java, Sumatra, Mexican, and Nicaraguan coffees, are usually described as nutty and earthy. If you get to about 3,000 feet, you get a very smooth and sweet coffee from regions like Brazil, Borneo, and Santos. The lowest altitude coffee is Hawaiian Kona, and it's known for being mellow, subtle, and soft. out of the 6,000 species of the plant. In the Coffea genus, there are only two that are commonly used as coffee beans that we humans eat and drink: Arabica and Robusta. 60% of the world's coffee is Arabica. This variety is the original plant native to Ethiopia. The plant produces beautiful scented flowers every 2 years that fruit to create the coffee bean seeds. The shrub can grow to 15 feet tall, or about 5 meters. The plant can self-pollinate, so there is a low probability of cross-pollination, and so it's a very stable crop as far as mutations are concerned. Robusta is a variety of the species called Coffea conifera. A Robusta plant is about half the size of an Arabica plant and is self-sterile, and so it relies on pollinators like the wind or bees to cross-pollinate to produce seeds. Robusta therefore has a lot of diversity in its characteristics, which leads to a hardier crop resistant to disease, pests, and parasites than Arabica. Once harvested, the fruit of the plant must be processed to get the seeds or beans out and ready to brew into our beloved beverage. The fruit is processed by either a dry or wet method. The dry method is the traditional way to process coffee beans, and is still really common in anywhere that there's not a lot of water. The outside of the fruit is cleaned with pressurized air or water, and if water is used, ripeness can be checked because unripe fruit will float in the water and can be removed. The fruits are then laid out and left to dry. The moisture in the fruit needs to be reduced to between 10 and 12%. This process leads to a sweeter and more complex flavor in the beans as the fruit is left on the seeds longer. The green seeds are separated from the fruit in a process called hulling. The extracted beans are sorted, grated, and then shipped out to be roasted. The wet or washed method is a machine-driven process and requires a lot of water. The fruit is poured into water tanks and floated down water channels to sort them based on size and ripeness. The flesh of the fruit is removed from the beans and the seeds separated into a fermentation tank for 12 to 80 hours to break down the outermost layer of the coffee bean called the mucilage. The coffee beans are then rinsed and laid out to dry, sometimes just using the sun, but sometimes there's mechanical dryers that are used to reduce the water to 10 to 12%. The coffee beans will then have a yellow outer layer on them called a parchment layer, so a hulling step is then needed to remove it, and now the beans are ready to be roasted. Coffee beans are green before being roasted. You can actually eat or brew coffee with green coffee beans. Green coffee bean extract has been touted as a miracle cure for all kinds of ailments, and of course to lose weight, but there's no evidence that it really does any of that, so be careful if someone tries to convince you of its benefits beyond the caffeine boost, at least until there are better studies on its health effects. Roasting does add flavors to the coffee bean. As the coffee bean is roasting, a chemical reaction called the Maillard reaction occurs. The Maillard reaction is why brown food tastes good. It is the process that causes the crust on a bread to darken and is a reaction between the sugars in the food and the amino acids, the proteins in the food. Seared steaks, fried dumplings, cookies, fried onions, malted beverages, whiskeys and beers, dulce de leche, condensed milk, black garlic, roasted peanuts, and chocolate all owe some of their flavor to the same chemical reaction. Coffee can go through a few color changes as it roasts. It begins in its raw green color, but as it loses moisture, it pales to yellow as the heat is increased from 390 degrees Fahrenheit, or about 200 degrees Celsius. It loses more moisture as it pales to yellow as the heat is increased to 390 degrees Fahrenheit, or about 200 degrees Celsius. The first crack occurs at this temperature. The coffee bean is doubling in size while lowering in weight as it loses the water. Then the Maillard reaction will begin as the beans caramelize and is now a lighter brown. As temperature is increased from about 400 degrees Fahrenheit to 430 degrees Fahrenheit, or 205 to 220 Celsius, the beans continue to expand and lose weight and darken. The oils of the bean begin to leach out and the coffee becomes shiny at about 440 degrees Fahrenheit or 225 Celsius. As the cell walls begin to break down The oils of the bean begin to make the coffee shiny at about 440 degrees Fahrenheit or 225 Celsius. And as it passes that temperature, the cell walls begin to break down and you get a second crack or expansion. And this color is now a dark brown, what we're probably used to seeing, and it's also very shiny. There are many options for coffee roasts that you can get in the store, and it all depends on what flavor you like. The least roasted varieties usually use names like cinnamon to describe the pale, dry beans that still have a light-bodied flavor and don't usually have the flavors of the Maillard reaction. You can go on one step where you have American, regular, or breakfast-style coffees that are starting to brown with some of the caramelization flavors of the Maillard reaction while still maintaining the original flavors of the beans. The next darkest roasts usually get names like City, Full City, or Vienna. They have been roasted to the second crack where the flavors of the roasting process overtake the original flavors of the bean. The darkest roasts are usually called names like Continental, European, Italian, and French. These roasts are less acidic, are usually very aromatic and fragrant. After you roast to your desired level, the next choice is the grind of the coffee. The choice is usually dominated by the brewing process you want to use. Brewing in the chemistry world is called extraction. You're extracting the chemicals out of the coffee beans, and therefore the flavors. The size of the particles affect how quickly and completely the water can extract the flavors from the beans. The finer the grind, the more complete and faster the extraction. Finely ground coffee is usually used for quick brewing methods, while a coarser grind are used for slower methods to get more flavors and most importantly the caffeine out of the beans. Heat and pressure are other factors that affect the extraction. The temperature of the water generally affects the acidity of the final product, as some of the oils and fatty acids will only be soluble in hot water. Some find that the hotter extraction methods create a more flavorful cup of coffee. Increasing the pressure of the brewing method will also increase the acidity and extraction completeness of the coffee beans. Now, in chemistry, you typically want to get a 100% extraction. We want to get all the chemicals out of something that we are extracting from. But for coffee, that's really a terrible idea and will lead to a really bad cup of coffee. A good cup of coffee, like life, is all about balance. For most methods, you want to extract about 18 to 22% of the soluble compounds in the coffee beans. Extracting more from the bean will lead to a bitter cup of coffee. That's why finer grind, higher temperatures, and pressure methods like espresso are very quick methods of extraction. While for coarse grind, lower temperature and pressures lead to relatively longer extractions, like a French press. As for the strength of the coffee, this is determined by another metric, and that is how concentrated the coffee is, or basically how much coffee extract per amount of water. So how many coffee beans per amount of water. In a typical cup of coffee, this would be about 1.2 to 1.4% soluble, or about 60 to 75 grams of coffee beans to 1 liter of water with brewing. Espresso can get slightly higher at this rate than this range, but that's because it's considered a stronger form of coffee. Because this is controlled by the ratio of coffee to water, and the level of extraction is how hot the water is and how long it is brewed, you could have a strong, under-extracted coffee, but you could also have a weak, bitter coffee if the conditions are off in one direction or another. Coffee basically has two ingredients, right? The beans and the water. Most people don't really think about the water as an ingredient, but what water is used can really affect the flavor and the extraction of your coffee. Most people would probably think that they should use distilled water. But this is probably not the best choice, as the pH of distilled water that you would get from a store is typically about 5.8, which is acidic. You may be thinking, well, pure water is neutral and has a pH of 7, why is it acidic? This is because after a few minutes of being exposed to air, distilled water will dissolve some of the carbon dioxide, which will react with the water molecules to make carbonic acid. Over time, distilled water can start damaging your equipment for brewing, especially anything with metals, as the acid will slowly eat into your equipment. You also want to avoid any hard water, which will start coating the inside of your brewing equipment with calcium deposits. Don't worry if you have been using hard water, though. The calcium deposits should be able to be cleared out of your machines with using some dilute white vinegar. Here in Lubbock, we have very hard water, so if you're using tap water, you probably have some calcium deposits. After cleaning with the white vinegar, be sure that you are rinsing your machine as thoroughly as possible, because you'll have the same problem as with the distilled water. The best waters to use are filtered water, spring water, or mineral water. Just make sure that your mineral content is between about 50 to 150 ppm, or parts per million, for an ideal level. Now, let's talk about brewing the coffee. There are many, many methods, and it's all about the flavors you want and the style you like. For methods that call for hot water, ideal temperature is typically between 196 Fahrenheit to 205 Fahrenheit, or about 91 Celsius to 96 Celsius. Preferably on the hotter end is better, but you don't want to use boiling water, which will over-extract your coffee. As we get into the methods, we'll start off with cold brewing. Cold brewing is the longest method and uses the largest extra coarse grind of coffee. The coffee grounds are added to cold water and extracted over 24 hours and then filtered. Because of the cold water, cold brew is a low acidity coffee, but if you love espresso or a French press coffee, you might find it less flavorful. It is a strong and more concentrated brew, so it's usually diluted with water or milk before being drank. You can also use a French press. French presses also use a coarse grind of coffee, though a little bit smaller than for cold brew, and it uses hot water to brew the coffee. The French press uses a plunger with a filter on it that is used to push the coffee grounds down to the bottom of the container so you can pour the coffee off the top. Some people find French press coffee to have a large amount of sediment in the product, but if you have a good quality grinder and a sufficiently coarse grind, it should be relatively smooth. An important note is that French press coffee should be drank within 10 minutes of brewing, as the beans are not completely separated from the water and it will continue to extract the compounds leading to a bitter coffee. The next method is called Chemex, which uses a medium coarse grind. I would describe it as a manual drip coffee maker. So you get a lot of human variation depending on how you do it. It has an open hourglass vase shape with a wooden handle around the narrowest part of the neck. You place a filter in the wide part of the neck and wet the filter with your hot water to hold it in place and seal the sides. Place your coffee in the wet filter and then wet the coffee grounds by adding about double the amount of water to coffee grounds and allow the coffee to bloom and absorb the water for about a minute. Then pour the rest of your water in a circle over the coffee grounds over 3 to 5 minutes and watch the dark brown liquid collect in the bottom of the vase. If the water passes through too quickly, try a slightly finer grind on your coffee or slow the rate of your pouring into the filter. If you use a vacuum or siphon coffee maker, then you will want to use a medium grind coffee. This method is one of the most complicated and labor intensive. The coffee maker is made of two glass bowls stacked on top of one another with a siphon in between. The bottom bowl has the water and the top has the coffee grounds. The siphon is just a pathway for the water that works against gravity. The vessel is heated from the bottom by either a flame or a stove. Once the water begins to boil, the steam produced creates an increased pressure in the bottom bowl that will start to push the water into the top. Once the water has traveled into the top vessel, the heat is turned off and the apparatus is allowed to cool down. And the water will begin to travel back down the siphon because the bottom container is now a vacuum as the water vapor is condensing. Now, the most popular, probably, I would think the most popular coffee is espresso. For espresso, you use a very fine ground of coffee. You will need an espresso machine. The machines are very expensive, and brewing espresso is not often done at home for that reason. Usually you have to have a barista grind the coffee fine and fill a piece of the machine that's called a basket with the coffee grounds. The coffee is then pushed flat with a special tool to evenly distribute the coffee, and the basket is then placed into the machine and given a half turn to lock it into place. A cup is placed underneath the machine and turned on, and the machine pushes hot, pressurized water through the grounds, following the path of least resistance. The espresso can then be consumed on its own or mixed with water or milk in any number of ways to produce lattes, Americanos, cappuccinos, whatever you like. The final method I'm going to talk about today uses an ultra-fine coffee ground, and it's a traditional method that dates back to the 1540s. For this method, you will need an ibrik, or the Turkish coffee pot. It is a metal hourglass-shaped pot with a long, usually wooden handle and a spout on one side. The water is filled no more than halfway in the pot and heated to be warm on a heat source, traditionally sand, but any will do, a stove, whatever you have. You can add your ultra finely ground coffee now, but do not stir. You may also add sugar if you like. Continue heating on low, and soon you will notice that the water will foam up at the neck of the pot. Remove the pot from the heat and let the foam subside, and then place back on the heat until it foams again. You can drink it at this point, or repeat this heating step for up to two more times. Most of the coffee grounds will settle to the bottom of the pot, and you can pour your coffee off the top. In chemistry, we call this decanting. It is recommended that you try your coffee at various stages to see what your preference is for brewing. You can also stir after each foam if you want, but you don't have to. You can experiment with that too and see what the best way is for you. And that is the secret to the scientifically perfect cup of coffee. Experimentation. Try different roasts, grinds, and methods of brewing until you find one that is perfect for you and your taste. Thank you for listening to Cowboy Chemistry. Go brew a cup of coffee and have a wonderful day. Thank you.